As I was reading in John chapter 10 about Jesus, I thought, you know what? That one thing I see about Jesus is he usually makes a proper entrance into our lives. Nothing like either, really, of these extremes. Now, I know there's the exceptional story, you know, the unusual experience that you hear of once in a while. But for the most part, when Jesus first enters into our lives, attempts to enter into our lives, he normally makes a proper appearance, a proper entrance. I was reading in John chapter 10, beginning in verse 1, and I'd like to read the first few verses, and then we'll work through the story of Jesus and the Good Shepherd. So let's start here. It says, Jesus said, I'm telling you the truth. The man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, and actually that little commercial fits this so well, but climbs in some other way is a thief and a robber. The man who goes in through the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. When he has brought them out, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. And in starting out this morning, I think the first point that I want to make here is, you know, I don't know what your experience has been. I don't know what you've read, what you've heard, what other kind of connection you have with God or the church. But you may have a fear that Jesus is going to kind of just come and sort of ruin your life, that he's going to come and sort of forcefully abduct you and tie you up, and now you're stuck. Or, you know, you may even on the other end think, you know, well, maybe he's going to like come so lightly, quietly, insignificantly that I won't even know that God was like calling out to me, and then it'll be my fault, you know, that I didn't respond when God was trying to speak to me. And what I see in this story is one of the things Jesus is trying to communicate is that he makes a good entrance into our lives, and that we'll know it's him, that he's not going to trick us. You know, Jesus doesn't do any of bait and switch approaches with us where you kind of think, oh, that's really nice to know Jesus. And then as soon as you say, okay, and you agree, then he slams you and starts really ruining your life. He's not going to make a forced entry. In fact, what we see, and we probably don't really fully understand how it works, but when Jesus has entered into your life, you understand it. And he tells us that the Father prepares a person, that somehow the Father gets us ready, and that when Jesus makes an entrance into our life, that we recognize him, we recognize his voice, and that we willingly respond to him and give him access to our life. And so I don't want you to be afraid about what God's intentions are, how he'll handle your life, what he'll do with you. When he comes, you'll be okay. And you'll willingly open your life to him. The other thing he says, and it's kind of like a two-way direction, even in the story that Jesus tells here in describing himself. On the one hand, as Jesus comes to us, it's going to be okay, and we're going to feel all right opening ourselves up to him. But he also comes as a door, kind of opening up another way of life to us. He's like a gate that gives us access to something we've never had access to before. And the thing that he tells us is he is the only door that will truly lead to safety in our lives and to a good place. And so he goes on, and I've skipped a couple verses here and jumping down to verse 7. It says, so Jesus said again, I'm telling you the truth. I am the gate for the sheep. All others who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Those who come in by me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only in order to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come in order that you might have life, and life in all its fullness. You know, as I was reading this, now, I don't know anything about ranching or farming. Actually, one time, the closest I came, I was visiting a friend in Arkansas. That's when I was living in Southwest Missouri, and he had to go out and get the cows to come in. And so he got me involved in it. And I think all he did is he gave me this kind of big stick and said, just kind of walk behind them and holler, and they'll go. And that was the first and last time I ever herded cattle. But, you know, an image that came to me was of cattle rustling. Now, you know, I have some images from the old Westerns that I've seen in the past, but also thought, well, let's go do just a little looking. And one thing I did find out is that actually in the last couple of years, it's been on the rise significantly. And they think because of the economy, people are more desperate and they're willing to do worse things. And so a lot of ranchers have been losing cattle around the country to thieves. And the thing about it is these guys are smart and they're very sophisticated. And they come when they think it's safe. And the cattle don't really have a clue what's going on. And they lead the cattle out of their pen or wherever they are. They gather them together. And most often they come with trucks and trailers. And they lead them onto this trailer. And without knowing what's going on, now they are immediately going to one of two places. Either they're going to the stockyard and they will be sold that day. Or they're going to be butchered and they will be sold as meat. And I could hear this as Jesus is saying, look, all the others, they're just thieves. And their whole intention is to steal and then for many ultimately to kill you. But you need to understand, I am the real shepherd. I'm the good shepherd. I come in through the gate. And you will recognize me and you will know my voice. And my intention is to lead you out to a safe pasture that will meet your needs. I want to bring you to a place that's going to be good for you, that you will enjoy, that you will delight in, that will satisfy you. And then I'm going to bring you back into safety at night. And I will lead you in and out. You know, one of the things that occurred to me too is, as I was reading this, they will come in and go out and find pasture. A lot of things that we, doors that we walk through, oftentimes end up being more enslaving in our lives, ends up being worse for us, and we find ourselves kind of trapped. And Jesus assures us, I am not bringing you into a trap. In fact, you have freedom to come and go. I'll bring you in when it's good for you to be in, and I'll lead you out. And I'll bring you back in, and you'll be coming in and going out, and I will be there making sure it's okay for you. Jesus is the shepherd who, as the door, leads us to safe places. It's where we find freedom. It's where we find care. It's where we find, he says, I'm bringing you out into life. There are no plans to kill you. Now, I understand, you know, I read the Bible. And I understand there's this element of kind of dying to ourselves, but we can be certain of this. God will not harm you. God will not rob you. God will not destroy you. He is bringing you into a good place. You know, I love the freedom that I feel in my life with God. I don't feel restricted in any way. I don't feel that God is like, you know, extremely limited my life, and I, you know, I'm just kind of there till he lets me do one little thing, and okay, can I go do this? Please, please, please. Finally, he concedes. I find God gives me incredible freedom, that he trusts me, and I trust him, and we have a wonderful relationship. I like to think of my life often as an adventure. I don't know what I'm going to get into, what's going to happen. I feel free to take risks in my own life, risk with the church. That may make you scared once in a while, but I feel that freedom that Jesus is leading me in, he's leading me out, and this is a pretty interesting life. You know, he wants us to know he's really good at being a shepherd. I may not know a whole lot about being a shepherd, but he is really good at it. In fact, he is such a good shepherd that one of the things he makes clear right up front is that he is actually willing to die for us. He said this, he went on verse 11 and 13. He said, I'm the good shepherd who's willing to die for the sheep. When the hired man, who's not a shepherd and does not own the sheep, sees a wolf coming, he leaves the sheep and runs away. So the wolf snatches the sheep and scatters them. The hired man runs away because he's only a hired man and does not care about the sheep. Now, we all know, most of us here know enough about Jesus and what he's doing and enough about the Bible that we know that 2,000 years ago, he proved his care and love for us and that he died for us so that we could experience forgiveness of sins and we can be God's friends. But that doesn't always translate for us to like, how about here and now in my current personal experience in life? And I think what he's saying as well is, look, I love you so much. I am so much a shepherd who knows you and cares about you that I would do anything for you, including die for you. You know, I try to get my head around such a concept. And there was only one way that I could really, really get my head and heart about this. I thought, well, I don't have any sheep, but I do have a little lamb. And her name is Selah. She's my granddaughter. Next, please. We're trying Poppy. I'm Poppy. And you know, I can really understand the shepherd heart of God. When I think of Selah, when I see pictures of her, when I'm around her, she makes me cry a lot. I mean, she don't actually do anything. Just turning around and looking at that picture, that little serious look with her little lei that she put on her head, I just want to cry. I would do anything for her. Really, there is nothing that I wouldn't do for her. I have to be careful. I would probably give her anything she wants. She wants Poppy's wallet, his phone, his laptop. She drops something and all she has to do is look and Poppy picks it up and hands it to her. Fortunately, she also has Donna in her life, who we're trying to have her call her Nana, and she's teaching her lots of good things. But Poppy's the go-to guy. And there is absolutely no doubt in my mind I would die for her. I wouldn't even have to think about it. If there was anything I could do for her safety, for her good, for her well-being, I would do it. You wouldn't want to be the one who's in the way of it. And I understand this is Jesus' heart for us. You know, maybe you can't connect to a shepherd and a sheep because that's just foreign to you. But I know you can connect to a parent and their child and a grandparent and their grandchild. Jesus loves you like that. And he would do anything for you. Watch out for the person who would get in the way of what he wants to do for you. There's nothing he would hold back. There's no cost that's too great. That is the heart that he has. That's what it means for him to be a shepherd for us. You can't help remembering the parable of the lost sheep. I just wanted to read part of it in Luke chapter 15, verse 3 through 6. So Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. What do you do? You leave the other 99 sheep in the pasture and you go looking for the one that got lost until you find it. When you find it, you are so happy that you put it on your shoulders and you carry it back home. Then you call your friends and neighbors together and say to them, I'm so happy. I have found my lost sheep. Let's celebrate. What an amazing picture of God, of Jesus, of his heart for us. You know, if we're all happily here and one of us gets lost, one of us goes astray, one of us is in harm's way, he's gonna look for you and he's gonna keep looking until he finds you. And he's so excited that he finds you that he's not gonna even make you walk. He is gonna pick you up and carry you all the way back, and then he's throwing a party because he is just so elated, so happy to have you. That's how Jesus thinks about us. Now, I think sometimes we have to be reminded of this. There are a lot of dimensions of our life with God. I understand that. And I know sometimes God challenges us. And sometimes he makes demands of us. Sometimes he assigns us, you know, things to do. Sometimes he's trying to change us. But we also need to know that sometimes he simply wants to be there for you. No other reason, no agenda, nothing he wants from you, nothing he needs from you. He just wants to love you. He just wants to comfort you. Just wants to heal you or encourage you. And I think we need to experience that aspect of God. We need to know that. And that's who the shepherd is. This kind of came home to me in a little more personal way a few years ago. It's when I had this onset of this eye problem where all of a sudden I could not control my blinking. And it was very energy draining because whenever I would have conversations with people, most of my energy and effort was going into keeping my eyes open and looking at you. And then second, listen to you. And third, answer back. And it was really hard. It was scary. I started wondering, can I be a pastor? Can I really do what's required? Can I give what it takes with this condition? Because it felt really debilitating. So during that time, a pastor friend called me and said, I am putting on a one-week prayer retreat at the foothills of the Sierra Madres outside of Monterrey, Mexico. Would you like to come? And man, I jumped at it. I thought, maybe something could happen. Maybe I can find something in this time away. Well, one of the things that we did is he asked us to take Psalm 23 and just kind of reflect on it and see if God is speaking to us through it. Well, I happened to bring this Bible that Carlos had gotten for me from a pastor from Buenos Aires. It's called Biblia para Todos. It's kind of a new Spanish translation. And that's what I was using there because I've been, you know, still am trying to learn more Spanish. And it was because of this translation that I really heard God speak to me. And there were two things about it that God just really spoke to me through this. And I'm just going to read a couple verses here that I'd read, and I'll give you a rough translation of it as well. And it just goes like this. Tú, Dios mío, eres mi pastor. Contigo nada me falta. You, my God, and because of my English, I just read it, you're my pastor. With you, I don't lack anything. Me haces descansar en verdes pastos y para calmar mi sed, me llevas a tranquilas aguas. You make me rest in green pastures, and in order to like calm or satisfy my thirst, you take me to tranquil waters. Me das nuevas fuerzas y me guías por el mejor camino. You give me new strength and you guide me by the best way. And then this last part of that, he said, porque así eres tú. Because that's the way it is with you. Because so you are. Why does God do this? Because it's just the way he is. And that really struck me. this is how he is. This is who he is. It's the way he is. So I wrote in my journal, they wanted us to write. And so I wrote down, and actually the thing that I wrote more about was that first line. So can I just read it to you? This is where I was, and this is how God spoke to me through that. And after reading it, I said, I have a pastor. Someone looking out for me, my good, my best interests. This pastor takes initiative with me. He, quote, leads me to the quiet waters. I don't have to just find them. It's not all up to me to get where I need to go. In fact, I should follow his lead. He's leading me where he wants me to go, how he wants me to be. He, quote, makes me or causes me to lie down. I wrote, I know what it is to be a pastor, to care for, to lead, to exert influence. I don't think anyone's doing that for me, but that I have to find my own way. So then I asked God a question, wrote down, Lord, why do I need to know this? And here's the answer I got. This just came to my mind immediately. Because you have felt alone and on your own. And I'll explain something a little bit later in this. Michael, the initiative does not lie with you, but with me. I will prompt you and direct you and help you get where you need to go and be who you need to be. Trust me, friend. This is how personal God wants to be. This is how much of a shepherd he is to us. I mean, this is real. God really wants to shepherd us. I couldn't help thinking about Ezekiel 34, verses 11 through 16. It says this, I, the sovereign Lord, tell you that I myself will look for my sheep and take care of them. In the same way as shepherds take care of their sheep that were scattered and are brought together again. I will bring them back from all the places where they were scattered on that dark, disastrous day. I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep, and I will find them a place to rest. I, the sovereign Lord, have spoken. I will look for those that are lost, bring back those that wander off, bandage those that are hurt, and heal those that are sick. Because I am a shepherd who does what is right. I think we need to know this. I think of all the images we have of God, of all the things we know about him, we need to know that he is a shepherd like this to us. And as such, he says that he knows us intimately. I mean, he really knows you well. And I guess that could be a scary thing. If you don't understand that he's a good shepherd, when you do know that, it is really good to be known and to be known very well. Said in verse 14 through 16, I'm the good shepherd. As the Father knows me and I know the Father, in the same way, I know my sheep and they know me. And I am willing to die for them. There are other sheep which belong to me that are not in this sheep pen. I must bring them too. They will listen to my voice and they will become one flock with one shepherd. They'll listen to his voice. They know his voice. And it said back in verse 4, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. God kind of, I don't know what's the best word to call it, but I guess related to me on this line in a very unique and kind of personal way a few years back. Actually, it's been quite a few years back. It was in 1989. You know, he says here that he calls us by name. Well, my birth name is Michael Palandro, but I grew up Roman Catholic, and so I was confirmed, and I got a confirmation name, and that name is John. Well, to me, my name has always been Michael John Palandro. Whether it was on my birth certificate or not, that's my name. So when I signed to get a Social Security number, I filled it out as Michael John Palandro. When I had to register for the draft back then, I registered as Michael John Palandro. Every legal thing that I've done my entire life, everything I saw has been Michael John Palandro. Well, one day we had a guy come and speak to our church back in 1989 who is kind of prophetic, and he sort of sees things and knows things that he's not supposed to know. Nobody's told him, and he just knows things about people, and he will use that knowledge for encouragement and to help us know God's heart. So we were here at the meeting. I had met him just before for about 5 minutes. He knew almost nothing about me except that I was on staff. He didn't meet my wife, and we weren't sitting together. So as he got, at the end of his stuff, he pointed to me and said, I want you to stand up. And then he pointed back to Donna, where she was, and said, and I'd like you to come and stand with your husband. Now we're thinking, how did he know she was my wife? He says, the Lord says, your name is John. And just like John the Apostle, who put his head on Jesus' chest, he wants to give you a greater intimacy with him. And I immediately turned to Don and said, I told you. Because when Don and I were dating, she thought my name was Michael John Palandro, because it is. Well, after we were married a number of years, somehow she found out that wasn't my birth name, but it was my confirmation name. And she said, that is not your name. But show me your birth certificate. What's on there? Your name is Michael Palandro. No, my name is Michael John Palandro. Of course, when God says, your name is John, all arguments cease. My name is Michael John Palandro. God knew that. And somehow he understood the value of that to me and how I saw myself. Well, during that same year, one other thing happened related to my name. Of course, some people were like, should we call you John now? I was like, no, that's my middle name. Don't call me John. But then a funny thing happened. I was thinking about my prayer life and my interactions with God. I've never heard an audible voice. Not God's audible voice. I've heard other audible voices. But I've never heard God in an audible voice. But when I converse with God, sometimes it's kind of like through my thoughts, he's talking to me. Well, I was reflecting on that and suddenly realized God never calls me Mike. He always calls me Michael. So much that I wouldn't think it was God if I thought I heard him say Mike. It's like, Mike, who is that? And so from that day on, I have gone by Michael. Because that's how God relates to me. That's who I am. That is my real name. Now, I still have a few friends who haven't caught on. And let's see, how many years is that? 21 years. Some people are slower than others. They're mostly people who I knew for a long time as Mike, and they just can't call me that. Now you all know. All right. I am Michael John Palandro. So says the Lord. I tell you this story to just give you an example of my own life. Jesus knows us. He really knows us. Somehow he truly calls us by name. You are not just another follower of him. You're not believer 2,684. You're Jessica. You're Rhonda to him. He is your shepherd. I realized from something he said in this passage too, and I mean, I kind of knew this, but it's always important to hear from God. And he's not a reluctant shepherd. Jesus hasn't done anything because he had to, or anybody made him to. In verse 17 and 18, he says this: "The Father loves me because I am willing to give up my life in order that I may receive it back again. No one takes my life away from me. I give it up of my own free will. I have the right to give it up," or that word can be translated, "I have the authority or the power to give it up, and I have the right to take it back. This is what my Father has commanded me to do." You know, as I think about that in the context of kind of two other sides of this, I realize Jesus was not a forced participant in the Father's plan or in the Pharisees' plot. You know, because we're aware of these two sides. The Father's will is that Jesus would become a man, live and die for us. And we also know that he was arrested in that garden by a mob with weapons, tied up, turned over to a Roman military, to a governor who had power, and they sent him to his death on the cross. That's only part of the truth. What Jesus also lets us know is, I have the power and the right to lay down my life for others and to pick it back up again and being raised from the dead into life. And yes, the Father wanted Jesus to do that, but he didn't have to make him do it, because Jesus wanted to do that because he loves us and he wanted to do it for our sake. And that's why he did it. He chooses to sacrifice in order to serve us. I like knowing that about him. You know, sometimes because of our experiences, backgrounds, I know I've kind of made this point a lot through John, we make these distinctions about the Father and the Son and the Spirit. And like I even joked in terms of my Catholic background, and when I was a child, I actually kind of thought that, well, God, you know, he's dangerous, holy, scary. Jesus became a human, so he kind of gets it a little better. And Mary was definitely a human, so if I talk to her, she can get Jesus to do what I need, and he can get the Father to do it. And Jesus keeps trying to tell us over and over again, the Father and I are exactly alike. We have the same desires. We think the same way. Make the same choices. He's never made me do anything. He doesn't have to. I love him. I would do anything for my Father. And I love you, and I would do anything for you. And we both know what that should be. And I do it. I am glad to know that about the Jesus who's come into my life. I want to just make a suggestion, something that maybe you could try this week. I'd like you to just take a little bit of time this week and maybe get your Bible, either read Psalm 23 or read Ezekiel 34 or read John chapter 10. And I just want you to sit alone and don't ask anything particular. Don't confess any sin. Don't admit to anything bad about yourself. Don't promise, you know, I'll do that thing. Now, just sit and let Jesus love on you. I don't know what'll happen. Just sit with any one of those passages and just let him be your shepherd and just care about you, comfort you, maybe heal you. And see what happens. And if you'd like, hey, good, bad, or ugly, feel free to email me and tell me your experience. All right? I think it'd be great to try it. And I think God is totally spine with us coming just to let him shepherd us. All right, I'm going to ask our prayer team, would you come on up to the front? And how about the rest of you stand up? Good chance for you to stand.